This is episode 29 of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, gear, and most certainly watches. Thanks for listening. We're recording on-site in London from the Braemont Townhouse.
Yes, indeed. We're on a very picturesque little street here on Fitzroy Square, which is kind of a swanky neighborhood. Apparently Guy Ritchie has a townhouse next door here.
Whoa.
Yeah, and before we jump in here, the reason we're actually in London and Braemont has a townhouse is they have decided to skip Basel, mm-hmm. Basel World this year for a number of reasons, one of which was sheer financials. It's just very expensive to rent out at Basel, and they discontinued the palace annex where they were exhibiting for the past few years. And they told us that they're a British brand, they're proud of it, and they want to have journalists and retailers and VIPs and clients come and see them on their home turf. And so we're here for a couple of days, and like I said, we're in a hotel across town, but James and I and a few other journalists are here at this nice, I don't know, it's like a five-level walk-up townhouse here right in this swanky part of London.
Yeah, and there's a party going on downstairs. If you can hear some noise, we apologize. Doing our best to be able to record these live. It's so nice to do them in person, face-to-face, and to be able to report on something when it's so fresh.
Yeah.
A lot of you will have already read about these watches or seen them on our Instagram by now, but this is a chance to go a little bit more deeper.
Yeah.
But I suppose before we get to that, we do have a little bit of housekeeping. So a handful of you have already noticed, but we now have an official website.
Yeah, it's great.
So it's thegreynato.com. It's now your home for show notes, all of our episodes. Well, I haven't gone and logged all the previous episodes, but certainly from like episode 26 or 27 moving forward. And you'll also always be able to find the show notes on SoundCloud if that's what you prefer, because that way they go into the podcast feed.
Yeah.
But if you want an easy spot to go back and check on an episode or learn a little bit more about Jason and I and our Instagram feeds and eventually pretty much anything that we're working on will populate to the site.
Yeah.
So we're pretty excited. It's been probably a year coming, but we had some help. So I would, both Jason and I would like to say a big thank you to Trevor from trevorboyson.com. So Trevor, really appreciate you stepping up and offering to help us out with the site and getting it up and running for us. So
yeah, thanks a lot, Trevor. That huge help. Yeah. And you actually wrote to us a while back and offered to help us out with that, and that I think that gave us the motivation to kind of get that cranked up. And
yeah,
and
for sure,
it's great to have a platform that we can grow on and serve our listeners. So
yeah,
thanks.
So thegreynato.com, and if you need to get a website made, I guess get in touch with Trevor. Again, that's trevorboyson.com. And thanks so much for your help with that. So what do you think? You want us to talk through the schedule, or you want to talk watches right off the bat?
Let's just kind of rehash kind of what we've done since we hit the ground here. It's really just a two-day experience here for all of us. And we flew in. I got in about noon yesterday, and you roughly the same time.
Yep.
Flew into Heathrow.
Feels like I've been here longer.
Yeah, yeah. It's been kind of nonstop since it was wheels down here. And we're staying at a pretty nice hotel called the Carinthia.
It's right near
Trafalgar Square, and the Eye of London is a couple blocks away, and the National Portrait Gallery and Houses of Parliament. Everything was within walking distance. Yesterday we kind of spent most of the afternoon here at the townhouse, mm-hmm. which was about, 20-minute drive from the hotel, and Braemont's just knocked it out. I mean, what do you think of the townhouse? It's spectacular.
It's fantastic. So it is like a house that somebody would live in, but apparently it's owned by a company that rents it out for these sorts of purposes. So it's all sorts of normal household-sized rooms that have been broken up by a theme. So there's one for the Supermarine downstairs, and they have a cinema room because we get to sit in on some presentation by Braemont ambassadors, which has been awesome.
Yeah.
But they've done a great job. So it's like three full floors of the building, and they've of course have a bar, and they've got a Norton motorcycle, ejection seats.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I know that some of this we would have put on Instagram, or you'll see in the posts that we eventually write. As far as the scene, and I think it's a really great space and a really neat way to do this. It's nothing like Basel.
No, it isn't. I think it, it's kind of a luxury to have this kind of in-depth experience, kind of a deep dive, if you will, with a brand to not only see their new watches, but I mean, frankly, Braemont's they play the British card pretty hard, and I think to their credit, this feels very different than anything you experience with a Swiss brand, or like with a Japanese brand or something. It feels you know, from the people and kind of the ambassadors they've brought through and the artifacts they've got here and just the location. It's
casual, they've but done their nerdy. Job.
Yes, exactly.
And and very much, I think they've done a nice job kind of connecting everything that we've been experiencing to what they believe the brand is about.
Yeah, and
which has been fun.
And the townhouse is just fun. I think it could qualify as a proper sort of Grey NATO clubhouse. I mean, it's everything that I think you and I kind of geek out about. There's a
There's a
big round glass coffee table top that's sitting on top of a spinning jet turbine from you know, probably like a Rolls-Royce engine, you know, jet engine. There's three different Mark series of Martin Baker ejection seats that you can sit in and
giant hang out in. Painted hood of an E-type like with a British flag and like a, kind of a street painting on it. And
yeah,
it's a neat space.
It's a neat space, and we've had a lot of fun, and of course we've seen the new watches. I think, you know, you touched on the ambassadors that we've heard, and I think that's another thing that I felt was really. I was talking to Nick English, you know, one of the founders of Braemont, yesterday, and I said, you know, most of what Braemont is doing here, it's so much in my and I think in our wheelhouse. You know, everything from, you know, mountaineering. We heard from
Kenton
Cool, who's a 12-time Everest summiter and a mountain guide, ski guide, just an all-around interesting fellow.
Awesome.
Who, you know, spoke about his experiences on Everest. He gave like a little slideshow presentation, about an hour long. Who else did we hear from yesterday? It was George.
Yep.
Willard.
George. Recently kayaked from
Greenland
to Scotland.
Yeah,
via the Hicks. Faroe Islands and a two-man crew. So we actually got to see a film that they produced with Red Bull that will be available on Red Bull TV soon. And we'll bring that up when it is on the show because everybody should check it out. What an adventure!
Oh man, I mean, just listening to those guys, aren't you inspired?
Oh, I love it. Yeah,
and great to be able to chat with them too. I mean, they've come to the kind of the drinks events afterwards, and you know, I know you had a nice long chat with George last night.
Yeah, he was great.
And really then today we went out to Henley, which is where Braemont has their headquarters, where they assemble watches and do the QC and servicing. And that was nice to get a little tour. I mean, it's a really small facility,
tiny
place,
yeah.
But you know, neat to see the watchmakers and kind of just where they are. I mean, there's like
little
sheep
bits
outside.
Of stuff everywhere.
There's like a field of sheep, like right outside the door, which is really neat. But the other ambassador that we got to meet was Alex Gregory, who was a British Olympic rower in both the London and the Rio Games.
Two-time
gold medalist, and he brought his gold medals and he gave a presentation. We had lunch with him at a little British pub.
Yep.
In Hambledon, and again got to chat with him. All really nice guys.
It's funny coming from. Like, I don't know about you. You've had some really good experiences with brand ambassadors, especially those that lie into sports. For me, it's mostly like I've been in the same room. You know, you were at the same event where we were in the same large room as George Clooney.
Oh yeah, right.
And like that's fine. I get it. Sure. Yeah. And that sells a ton of watches.
Yeah.
For Omega Clooney.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to have not only the level of access that we had, where you're able to stand and have a drink with some of these guys and ask, where do you poop on the kayak and how?
Yeah.
And those sorts of things. But not just that, but the fact that, I mean, Braemont clearly has money. They could go after actors. They could go after, and I mean, they have some actors that aren't official ambassadors, but wear their watches. And,
yeah.
But for their ambassadors, it's so much more serious than... we think you're cool, and it would be cool if this was on your wrist. Like I would say, like they've almost approached ambassadors the same way they've approached like their Jaguar watch.
Yeah,
right. They're very serious about its connection to the car. They're very serious about the car's connection to the sort of thing they do. And then again with Norton, and the new Norton, which they're going to be running at Isle of Man. Like these are all great connections, and I honestly think they take kind of the same perspective and apply it to who they choose to hang out with and be. Because these, you know, almost exclusively British adventurers or sportsmen,
right.
Or inventors,
yeah,
and some really varied stuff. But you definitely get the idea that they didn't pick these guys because they were the most famous. I mean, these are names that, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. I mean, you wouldn't if you didn't know who Kenton Cool was, he'd walk by you and like you'd not a celebrity, maybe within a space, sure,
yeah.
But I just kind of dig that's the approach to we make a product that has. We believe these values, and we'd like to find people that extol the same values, and it's not just chasing celebrity or the glitz or the glamour.
Right, right. Yeah, and the accessibility of the ambassadors, I think, has been just really fun, and to see, even in the George Bullard video, you know, these guys, they're using the watches. I think a lot of brands kind of go over the top with timing is key to sailing or timing is key to a pilot or something. These guys, they don't overplay that, but watching that kayak video, I saw that both of Ollie Hicks and George Bullard had Supermarine 500s, and they had them lashed to their dry bags in the front of them on the kayaks, and I think they were just using them to time, you know, just to see the time, but, you know, sometimes they put them on their wrist, sometimes they had them lashed on the boat. You could tell that they were using them for a legitimate purpose.
For sure.
Kenton, of course, had a summit shot on, I think, on Everest with, you know, his Supermarine on his wrist.
And, I mean, that white out with the green accents, which is a pretty cool version. And he was saying that, you know, the watch is, a watch is essential in that pursuit because of the turnaround time.
Yeah.
Where if you're late deciding you're not going to make it up, then you die.
Yeah. And I don't think he is necessarily saying it has to be a Bremont. Could be a Casio. But he likes Bremont.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a watch that survives what he does. And therefore, it's a good watch for him. And then, of course, Alex today. I mean, that was really cool.
Yeah, really cool.
He wore your watch, basically. Yep. Your white dial
white
solo.
Dial solo on a blue, the Temple Island blue rubber, a way that I've worn the watch. And I mentioned to him at lunch, it's just strange seeing someone else wear that watch because I'm so used to seeing it on my wrist. And they're very uncommon.
Yeah.
Even among a Bremont.
But what's the kicker? He wore that watch.
On the finish line for the gold medal race. Yeah,
in Rio. I mean, there's a photo of him, you know, with that watch. I mean, it was cool, you know?
For sure.
So, you know, ambassadors and the townhouse and visiting Henley and the pub lunch, very picturesque little place. But, you know, ultimately, I think the reason we came was to see the new collection, the new watches.
And I guess, I mean, the natural place to start is with the new Supermarine, the S300.
Yeah.
Or the Type 300. They kind of go two different ways on it, depending on where you check. But it is the S300.
Yeah.
And the S301, which is the vintage-inspired version. So these are on our Instagram now. So if you're listening to this and you have literally no idea what we're talking about, load up Instagram or Bremont's website, and you'll be able to see the watches. But this is a Bremont's push into a size that's the result of a survey they did for a number of customers, Bremont customers, and that expressed wanting a 40-millimeter diver.
Yeah, you know, when I first saw the photos, I don't know about you, I think we traded some Slack chats, and I was kind of neutral. I thought, you know, nice-looking piece, doesn't really feel as Bremont to me as some of the others. And personally, I still prefer kind of the S500, same. S2000 aesthetic. However,
pop hand with the center, the design in the center of the dial on those I really adore.
Yes.
I mean, your 2000.
Yeah.
I never get to see a 2000. They're not around.
Yeah.
It's a fun watch, but it's a very different aesthetic at the 40 millimeter side of the Supermarine equation.
Yeah. And I think it was nice to be able to try the watches on, and that gives you the full, you know, the full experience of what the watch is like rather than looking at flat photos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, it has the triptych case, the three-part case, the new watches do, which is very signature Bremont. They moved the crown to 3 o'clock, and it doesn't have that interesting crown guard that the S500 and S2000 have. But there's three dial varieties in this one.
Yeah, so there's the two S300s, one in blue, one in black, and those use a 12, 6, and 9 Arabic marker with the date at 3.
Yeah.
And then there's the 301, which is the vintage-inspired model, which is just a Rolex-style layout of markers.
Yeah, with the dots and hashes. And,
exactly. And then it uses a burnt sort of effect on the loom and a gilt bezel insert and that sort of thing. So more of a gold vintage-y inspired.
Right.
And of the three, I liked it. I would have liked to seen one that didn't have any gilt and just had normal loom.
Oh, yeah.
But I did like, but for me, it's the blue one. Now, the blue one, the photos that we got, people should know that it's a prototype. So the ceramic insert on the one that we saw is not the correct blue. It's just as close as they could get it in time for the show.
Yeah.
And for those of you who, you know, are listening to this and think that's strange, that's super common for something like that when you have brands, especially smaller brands, just trying to get things done in time for a hard deadline. A lot of watches, by the time they're actually shown by a brand, have been out, like have been done for a while.
Yeah.
And it just comes down to these production challenges. So these all have a ceramic insert, and the two black models use a flat matte ceramic. It's actually matte enough to pick up a fingerprint.
Yeah.
But the blue one is very shiny.
Yeah.
And it's a slightly wrong blue, but they assured me that they're working on that and the color will be sorted by the time the watch even comes out.
And the blue, the blue ceramic, is that going to have the polished or is that going to be matte?
I think it's high polished, yeah. like the one we saw. And it has a kind of a radial effect on the, like a sunburst dial.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the blue a lot.
Like the blue is very similar to the U2 that they make, the U2 sort of Twin Crown pilot's watch that's based on the MB series with the Arabics. It's different Arabics, it's a different dial, but that blue kind of has the same feel to it. I think of the three, I agree, I like the blue. I like the blue dial. I think I would have loved a matte bezel on that one.
Agreed.
The black one, I think, feels a little bit, I hate to say it, but a little bit too Black Bay, vintage sub, even though the markers are different, maybe sort of, but I was really surprised by how much I actually liked the Type 301, which is the vintage one.
I had it on a leather strap, and it was really good.
Yes, and it wears really nicely, and everything's really matte. Mm-hmm. That dial is, it's matte black.
It's so matte, it picks up other color. Like, I was editing the photos, and if you don't color correct them, it looks brown.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just picking up the brown from my jacket, any light that was reflecting around the room.
Yeah, yeah. It's really nice.
It is a great color. And the sizing, what do you think? 40 works.
Perfect.
For me.
I like 40. You know, it's like any sort of the vintage sub or your Explorer 2. I mean, it's arguably the perfect size.
They wear bigger than a sub.
Yeah, they do wear bigger than a sub. I noticed that too. I don't know why. I think the lugs or something, but it's a very satisfying watch to put on. And it's not heavy like the bigger ones.
Yeah, it's not heavy, and it's only about as thick as my Solo, so it's a very wearable watch, especially at 40.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it's definitely within a millimeter of the thickness of a Submariner.
Yeah.
A couple millimeters thicker than something like my 2254, the Omega.
Yeah.
Which these actually use a very similar movement. It's a 2892 modified by Bremont, and the 1120 from Omega was a...
Right.
2892 modified by Omega, but the I think they all look really good. I would not spend a dollar on the bracelet.
Yeah.
I have the bracelet for the Solo. It's the identical bracelet, and I think if you love bracelets, it's the Bremont one is fine.
Yeah.
But I honestly think you look at the way the overall bracelet at this price point, it doesn't have a trick clasp. It doesn't have a lot of built-in micro adjustments. It doesn't. Right. They're kind of difficult to mount.
Yeah.
I still think with a Bremont, you're best with one of their straps. They make beautiful straps.
Yeah.
Or something like a NATO, and they're actually offering your option of a NATO, a leather, or the bracelet on all three of these.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I think Bremont's just look really good on straps.
I think they're designing them. I feel like they designed them from the ground up to be on leather.
Nick English told me yesterday. He said that. He's always loved watches on leather straps, and I think he said that they've made the steel bracelet because a lot of people like dive watches on bracelets, and they feel they had to do it. And it's a fine bracelet, like you said, it's a very high quality bracelet. But yeah, aesthetically, I prefer it on
20 millimeter lugs.
Yeah.
Now, with the 300, unlike I believe the S2000 and definitely the S500, there's no special rubber. There's no fitted rubber.
Oh, right, you're right.
So with the 300s, they make a 20 millimeter version of the Temple Island strap, which will fit.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it'll be a whole new host of straps. Did you check out the NATO?
Not as much. What did you think of it?
It's not like it's. I still would. If they had asked my opinion, they should just be buying something like the Toxic.
Yeah.
It's very smooth, which is kind of like the Omega one.
Oh, yeah.
You either kind of really like that or you don't, and I prefer a little bit more of a pure nylon, more of a Cordura.
Yeah.
Sort of finish, and it uses the big hoop.
The loops, yeah.
So it doesn't have... I think I would probably buy it on the leather, which was really nice. It's a vintage-style leather, a two-stitch style leather strap, and then I would just throw... I would buy a NATO in every color and just change it depending on laces, shirts, sleeves, whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So. Yeah. So, you know, I think we talked about the new Supermarines a fair bit here, and I think it's a logical next step maybe to talk about the other kind of really big release, which uses a similar case.
Arguably,
same case. It's a 40 millimeter watch as well, and that's the new Airco, AIRCO.
All one word, yeah.
Which is, they named it after the first British aviation company that was making planes back in the First World War time period. Airco, vintage style, pilot's watch.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the they call it a pilot's watch. It looks and wears like a field watch to me.
Yeah.
And those were the ones that, for me anyways, of between, say, the S300 and the Airco, for the being new, brand new models,
yeah,
that were way better in person than the photos.
Yeah.
So the original press photos and the renderings, I thought, like, it's kind of flat. You know, you're still looking at several thousand dollars.
Yeah.
And it looks kind of, not derivative, but not, I just feel like, I was, and but when in person, much better. There's more depth to the dial. The red is a better color in person that they're using on the second hand.
Yeah.
For the Airco, the Mach 1 is the more vintage field, and then the Mach 2 is a dressier watch.
Yeah, with a gray dial.
Yeah, with a gray dial and
the
Breguet applied
style, sort of.
Sort of,
I don't know if they're
Arabic,
technically Breguet, but they're
applied Arabic, polished numerals.
Yeah.
And it's a screw down crown, which they don't talk
about.
I had to dig around for that.
Yeah, you're right.
But
you're
talking about, you know, the Solo doesn't have a screw down crown, the current generation of the Solo.
Yeah.
So 40 millimeters, a screw down crown, you get the triptych case, and you get their amazing crystal. One of my favorite crystals, and it's COSC certified, which is good. That's, you know, it's up to you whether COSC is the kind of thing that would tip the scale to buy a watch or not, but they're not just buying boxes of ETA movements and slamming them into watches.
Right.
And then everything that comes back from COSC is retested with the movement in the watch at Henley before it's actually shipped or sold to anyone. So that's worth mentioning too, because there's a bunch of stuff you don't realize until you do kind of stand in the headquarters, and they're like, no, like, we redo all of that.
Yeah.
So COSC is like a prestige thing. It's a marketing thing, but the movements aren't tested in the watch.
Right.
They're tested essentially on bulk and then returned, having passed essentially the ability to run properly as a movement.
Yeah. And a watchmaker might drop the movement while he's putting it in, and you'd never know. It's off by, you know, several seconds. And so
Bremelin is then casing that movement, hands, all of that, putting it on a tester and making sure it's running correctly and has been oiled correctly and all those sorts of things and is actually ready to be worn.
Yeah.
Not just ready to pass a test.
Right.
Which is cool. I didn't know that. I bought a Bremelin. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And
I think,
what did you think of the Aircos? Where did you land?
I like them both. Again, it was one of those situations where we saw the early photos, you know, embargoed press release that came out a few days before we arrived here. And I think you and I discussed it, and it was, kind of like, okay, nice watch, but, you know, kind of underwhelmed. Saw them in person, really liked them. I'm not a field watch guy, but I agree with you. I think if someone was in the market for a Ranger or, I can't think of something else that maybe like the IWC, what are they up to, like the Mark 18 or something, you know, something along those lines. Where
that's a smallish pilot's watch. If you wanted something that wasn't the Flieger design, this is, you know, they say they've basically studied the raw design of like World War II pilot's watches.
Yeah.
So a little bit closer, actually a little bit closer, so especially the Mach 1 is a little bit closer to like the Triple W's, the Dirty Dozen.
Right.
Obviously, it's bigger, and you're not talking with a sub-seconds. It's a central seconds. But, you know, nice little red accent on the Mach 1, and you get a Lume, which is key. I actually think it's a pretty killer little sports watch. And then if you wanted something a little dressier, you have a polished case, this really lovely gray metal dial on the Mach 2. I like both of them.
And the Mach 2, they're the same watch. They're both Aircos, but the Mach 2, you know, it moves the date to 6 o'clock. The hands are,
which looks really good.
I think they're called Dauphine hands. You got the applied Arabics, sort of italicized, sort of Breguet, quote unquote.
Yeah,
style
full
hands.
Polished. Full so they polished. Catch a lot of light.
And it feels almost like a dress watch. I mean, it's really dressy.
I would say it is. Yeah.
I saw, you know, our friend James Lambden is here, and he had it on with a tweed sport jacket and whatever, and it looked downright dressy.
Yeah, if you wanted something with some water resistance and a great crystal, the tough case, but that you could still
know,
definitely take wear to the office because it's not that big. It's going to fit under a cuff.
Right.
These aren't very thick watches.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I just anticipating some, you know, feedback and some comments that I saw, you know, on some of the blogs and some of the Instagram posts about, you know, people saying, oh, it looks like a Tudor, or for that money I'd buy a Tudor or X. Tudor seems to be the logical comparison point that people seem to make, but
dollars to dollars, I get it.
That's fine. You know, wherever you want to spend your money, whatever brand you like, we both like Tudor a lot. They make great watches. But I was talking to Adam Craniotes of Red Bar fame yesterday as well, and we were talking about this very subject. About some perceptions about Bremont and you know, where people want to spend their money and kind of that comparison factor. And he brought up a good point. He said, you know, I don't make that argument about one being better than the other. It's where you want to spend your money, and the people that are going to come and buy an Airco, or in the case of what we were talking about, the new Supermarines, you buy this watch because you want to buy a Bremont. you might already have a tutor, or you like Braymont's story, or you just want something that maybe somebody doesn't look across the room and say, oh, Rolex or tutor.
Yeah.
That's the person these watches are for. I mean, arguably the quality is probably the same across the board.
Yeah, but you're getting a hardened case, which I actually think it makes a big difference. I've beat up my Solo. I wear it a lot.
Yeah.
I got one scratch on it in 4 years.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, beat that horse to death or, you know, gush too much here. But I do think that that's a valid point, and it's something that I see a lot in comments and things about, you know, comparing Braymont to other brands. And I think that the pricing is all very, you know, sort of competitive and sort of that same stratus of the $4,000 to $5,000 or $3,500 to $5,000 price range. So should we move on to another watch?
Yeah, for certain. So I'm the next one. There's the new Alt 1 P.
Yes.
Which is not, you know, they're still, it's technically the Alt 1 P2 is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
So the original Alt 1 P, one of their first watches, that classic Braymont kind of military, modern military design.
Yeah.
And it spawned a number of other watches for them. The Alt 1Z, the Alt 1ZT, et cetera, et cetera. So they're continuing kind of a three register sports chronograph, blue, black, and now a cream version.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of main change is the watch was further differentiated from the Alt 1ZT line is it no longer has the RotoClick bezel.
Right.
So they've now you just have a simple two push chronograph crown at three.
Yeah.
And I thought they were great. The blue is like an electric blue, very similar to the blue they've used on the S300.
Yeah.
And the black is just, I mean, it's one of those watches that has kind of defined Braymont's aesthetic in many ways. It's in a lot of ads. It's that in the MB.
Right.
But if you were to port an MB to a chronograph, I think you would land somewhere around an Alt 1.
Yeah.
And with this new P2, I just feel like they just kind of refined a design, simplified.
The P was always actually one of my favorites of the earliest Braymonts, and I think what I like about it is it's three register, but it's not that typical Valjoux 7750 layout. It's not the 12.96 sub registers. It's the 9.36.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like that aesthetic a little bit better. And yes, they got rid of the RotoClick, which gets rid of a crown, which cleans up the watch's look a little bit. I think one of the biggest changes on this watch, and one of the quibbles I had with the old one, was it had skinny little hands, and they changed that on this one. They introduced kind of a broader, I guess you call it kind of a sword hand.
A little bit of a sword hand, yeah.
You know, nice broad hour hand, the minute hand's a little bit bigger. It just makes it all the more legible. So you look at it, and it's like, yeah, not that much different, but the details add up in this one, and I think it's a cool watch.
And the blue has kind of a cream, luminous application, red accents. You still have a date, and it's at 4:30, which isn't a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
But I also think if you're buying a watch like this,
The
date's probably important, because this is the sort of like an everyday wearing thing. And
right.
And like I think it's fine for a watch nerd that changes his watch all the time to say, like, I don't like dates, I hate them. Because I don't. I genuinely kind of, they're a pain point for me with watch design.
Right.
But, I even heard it recently from one of the guys at Braymont, that when they make a watch without a date, the first thing somebody asks them is like, oh, could you make one with a date? I need a date.
Yeah.
And admittedly, I do use my one when I set the date. On some of my older watches, I don't even try. It takes so long.
Yeah.
But, you know, with anything with Kwikset, I often reference that number.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hypocritical in that I don't like the date display, but I do use it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's there at 8. There's not a lot of placement options for a three register chronograph, so and I think the cream is really cool.
Cream was cool. That was a new addition, and
we didn't get to see that one. They said they don't have the color quite worked out perfectly in as far as a production.
Two other chronographs that they introduced were the they made a new Jag Mark II
chrono with a white dial,
and a which I really like. It's got little red tips on the hour and minute hand. Beautiful watch.
Blown away, because I flatly didn't care for the Mark II chronograph.
Yeah.
I typically don't like it where a watch is so automotively inspired that it stops being a great, really legible watch, because so, you know, they just put these tiny dots at the lower part of the watch face so that it still looks like a you know, because a rev counter doesn't go all the way around watch has to.
Right.
But that white dial, I'm a sucker for a white dial. Yeah. Black accents, red, you know, black on white with red accents of black sub-dials.
Yeah.
And it's that red tip
on
the hour and the minute hand.
Which was almost, I heard, was a kind of a last-minute addition.
So
like
they
hand-painted them like for the prototypes. And they're like, I think we like this. They also added a tachymeter scale, which, you know, for better or for worse, you know, I think it looks great on the watch. I think, you know, guys that like automotive watches, I think that that kind of gives it some legitimacy because you can actually measure speed with it. Beautiful watch.
Yeah, and they have kind of a big whole rally strap, a blue leather rally strap.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've now done it with red stitching just for this watch.
Yeah.
And a cool strap, one that I currently have on my Solo.
Yeah.
I think they're great, but I don't have the one with the red stitching, which is very cool. I was blown away by how much I liked the look of this one, because the Jaguar ones, I think, have always been very cool.
Yeah.
But they weren't. I didn't look at them as a Bramont I would buy and wear.
Right.
But this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't own a Jaguar. I'm not sure if that would bother me even. But
yeah.
Because the way they've gone about.
Yeah. Right.
Connecting with the brand doesn't connect with a model.
Right.
Like a specific car.
Yeah.
You know, the originals were tied to the lightweight.
Yeah.
But nobody's. I'm not buying a $2 million Jaguar. I like it though. I like that they've got the dark subdials, the kind of panda dial, and the. The photos kind of make it look silver, like a high polish or like a high brush silver.
Yeah.
But it's very white. Much white.
It's white.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool.
The other two register chrono, you know, moving on, is the new Norton.
Yep.
Which has a kind of a neat backstory. I mean, you know, Bramont, one of their earliest limited editions was a Norton two register chronograph from, I don't know what year, but Mike Pearson has one that he's very proud of. It's a really cool watch. The new Norton one I like. It kind of reminds me of the Jaguar piece. You know, it's sort of this panda dial, but it has these gold accents. The subdials, I believe, have this sort of... They're black, but they have...
They're
almost
rimmed,
like a,
in, rimmed in like a gold.
And do they have sort of a texture, almost like a carbon fiber texture to them? Or sort of a... It seemed like they did, and then the name Norton is you know, written in script at kind of the lower half of the dial. It's kind of like the Jaguar watch. Like, would you own that watch if you... didn't own a Norton? I might not, but if I were kind of a motorcycle guy and was looking for just kind of a cool motorsports themed chronograph, it's neat. It's a neat watch.
So they didn't have this one here to show us.
Yeah.
But there's technically going to be two versions. This was unclear in their press release.
Yeah.
So there's a version that's going specific that will be offered to people who buy the VR or the V4 SS Norton race bike.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be the version that you can see online, which is a kind of a silvery dial with these kind of funky, it's a cool font for the numerals.
Right.
And then, these carbon fiber subdials with a gold accent and then a gold Norton and the date, much like on the previous Norton LE, dates at 6 and looks really good.
And I think since we haven't seen the watch, like to your point, we probably can't go into too much detail about it because we haven't actually spent any time with it. But what's really neat is the story. I mean, they have one of these V4 SS bikes downstairs here in the townhouse.
Bright polish.
It's a mirror finished bike, but it's carbon fiber. The fairings are
unbelievable.
So you tap it, and it sounds like wood. You know, I mean, it's that.
Yeah, it's a wrap, I suppose. It's probably not paint, but
and it, you know, has the Bramont logo very prominently in the Norton, and these bikes are going to be raced in the
Isle
of Man TT. Yeah.
So one of the most hardcore races in the world, bikes or otherwise.
Yeah.
Of motorized pursuits that doesn't get a lot crazier than TT.
Yeah.
And, a quick note, anyone listening who doesn't know what Isle of Man is or doesn't know this documentary, go online and dig up Closer to the Edge, TT3D. It's actually not in 3D. I'm not sure why they called it that. But it's a fantastic documentary about a guy named Guy Martin racing at Isle of Man. And it's about his attempt to do this unbelievable race. We talked about TT a while back because we linked to a Subaru video.
Yeah.
If you're not, even if you only like I don't really aspire to own a motorcycle, but I love TT. It's properly crazy.
It's like an adventure sport, you know.
Entirely.
It's really
like
cool.
Imagine downhill skiing at nearly 200 miles an hour.
Yeah. Right.
Like
with hedgerows and stone fences, you know, right
people.
Up to the edge of the road. People.
Yeah.
All hay bales. Yeah.
So it'll be cool to see the, you know, the version, the Norton watch is the, I think, a 200-piece LE, and then there's like a 40-piece, maybe it's 40 or maybe it's 200. There's another version that's being offered with the bike, it's numbered to the same extent that the bike is.
Yeah.
I apologize. I cannot remember how many that is. And then, I think that's the Norton. Did you get a chance to see the new America's Cup piece?
Actually, I didn't.
They only had one of two, so they had one that's based loosely on the same overall idea as the Wright Flyer. So it uses the
Lejeune-Paré
movement
and
a gold case and then a black textured dial that has, I guess it's the AC logo.
Right.
Repeated, but you would have to look at it so closely to notice it's a logo and not just a design of some sort.
Yeah, yeah.
Really beautiful.
Beautiful watch.
Intimidatingly expensive.
Yeah.
And too fancy for, say, our wrists, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you were really into yachting or America's Cup or tied to that
and
in some way,
and pull off gold, I mean, I think
there's that too.
I think I don't know if it was you or somebody earlier mentioned, you know, they don't associate Bremont with gold watches
for sure.
But you know, I think there are people that do want gold watches, especially people that own expensive yachts, and it's a beautiful watch,
gorgeous watch. And then there's another version that they didn't have here that's based on the Alt 1P, which is a new regatta style. Chronograph. You can see pictures of that one online. That's about the best we can offer you at this point. We haven't seen it. I don't know if it actually has a true regatta timer or if it's
I think it's just some colors
on the subdial.
Yeah.
It looks
beautiful.
Properly cool.
Yeah.
But I don't have a lot of details about that one as they didn't have it here. So
yeah. And Bremont, you know, as many people might know or may not know, Bremont does not have the official timekeeper status for the America's Cup this year switched over to Panerai, and Panerai is now also sponsoring two of the boats, which is kind of an odd thing. They're doing the SoftBank, the Team SoftBank Japan boat, as well as the Oracle boat, of course. But Bremont, you know, remains committed to the America's Cup and kind of the collection that they had started with. And I think they'll have some presence in Bermuda just to kind of honor the race itself and kind of keep on with the sailing watches. So, you know, they had a couple of new 32mm ladies pieces.
Mm-hmm. Automatic, COC certified, so that's pretty rare for a women's watch. Central seconds, usually they ignore the seconds hand so they don't have to certify them.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, it was a black dial with a rose gold case.
And the black dial, rose gold with Roman numerals, and then one in a white dial with the 12.39 sort of effect in it.
Yeah, I tried it on. It looks great on my wrist.
Oh, yeah, sure. from the 32 all the way up to your 45mm
S2000. Right, yeah.
And I think beyond that, I mean, that's everything that they kind of announced at the event. We did see some other cool watches. There's a Red Bar event shortly after we shot all the watches, so Red Bar London kind of rocked up. You know, obviously with Adam being here and James Lambden from Analog Shift, you have a big contingent of the kind of OG crew for Red Bar. And that was great. Those guys are awesome. You never fail to meet really nice, fun watch nerds at these events.
Yeah.
And
nice to see Matt.
It was great.
AKA Noodlefish or Watch Nerd on Twitter and
Watch
Instagram.
Nerd, it was great. A real treat to meet him in person. Chatted for so long on Twitter and such.
Yeah.
And Lambden's got an amazing aqua lung.
Oh, he's got the black lung, the black quote unquote black lung, thin case Doxa sub 300 from 1960
with the expansion BOR bracelet.
Beautiful piece. And he was wearing that today.
I tried it on the cab out to Henley today, and it was just, I was just blown away by how freaking cool Doxas are, old Doxas.
Yeah. And then there was a guy, one of the watchmakers at Bremont today, was wearing for a few years. The Royal Air Force procured pilots' watches from Seiko. This is kind of when things moved to the quartz era, and this was like it was from a navigator on a Harrier jet. The circa 1989 was the code that was printed on the back of this watch. These quartz, kind of little quartz, cool Seiko chronographs on a very faded out NATO strap, and that was kind of neat to see.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and then one of the Red Bar guys last night, I don't know if you saw this, I have photos of it, I'll put it on Instagram, I haven't yet, but maybe by the time you listen to this, had a really clean ghost bezel Great White Sea Dweller.
Really?
Yeah, the best one I've ever seen.
That. Oh, man. Yeah.
Really cool to see one lug holes.
Yeah.
The most perfect HEV, the one that deserves to be on a watch, that watch is great. And the bezel is like a very fat, flat, faded ghost bezel. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
So I'll put a picture up. I snapped a few shots of that because he was kind enough to let me try it on, which is bonkers. But
yeah, so downstairs they're having, I don't know if you've heard this in the background, if so, we apologize, but it is a field report.
Yeah.
They're having what they're calling sort of a VIP drinks event downstairs, and just on our way up to the top of the townhouse where we've got a little meeting room where we're doing this recording, I glanced in and saw a couple of kind of cool folks. Ben Saunders, who we're both big fans of, the Polar Explorer. He's downstairs with Jake Mayer, who I don't know if he still holds the title, but he was the youngest Brit to summit the Mount Everest, as well as all the 7,000-8,000-meter peaks around the world. So he's here. It sounds like a great event. We're going to get ready to head down there, but maybe we should jump into final notes.
Yeah, let's get to it. You want to open up?
Sure. Yeah, so, as some of you may know, and maybe we've discussed on past episodes, I'm a bit of a space nerd or a space geek, particularly kind of Mercury, Gemini, Apollo programs.
For sure, and, the right stuff.
The right stuff, yeah. And I happened upon, I don't remember how I stumbled upon this, but There's a YouTube channel called Vintage Space, which has some great old videos that are updated fairly regularly. You know, just old, great old black and white footage of Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs. There's kind of educational videos. Just cool old footage if you kind of geek out on that stuff. And it was put together by a woman who's she calls herself a space historian. Her name is Amy Shira Teitel. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But she also has a website of her own, a blog called Vintage Space. And we'll put the address in the show notes. She's done some writing for Popular Science magazine and a few other publications. She's kind of well known in that very narrow space of vintage space history. And, you know, just great stuff. I think her blog is equally interesting. The videos aren't updated quite as frequently, but she does update the blog almost weekly. And she always has, like, these really interesting topics about, you know, just the kind of the minutiae of the space program and little things that you might not have really known about that, you know, why they did something a certain way or how they built a capsule or, you know, there was a story about a woman who was training to be one of the Mercury 7, but then they kind of discontinued the Mercury program, moved to the Gemini program, and so she didn't get to go up in space. You know, just interesting kind of stories like that. So, Vintage Space, yeah, check that out.
Very cool.
Yeah.
My first is a Reddit, a subreddit of the reddit.com called r/ultralight. And these are like, a friend linked me because they knew I was kind of a little bit into backpacking and kind of adventuring and stuff. And they said, check out the level of nerdery happening here. And sure enough, like these are some of the most hardcore, like ounce cutters, gram cutters that I've ever seen. These are guys that like, you know, these guys are basically into ultralight backpacking, like through hiking.
Yeah.
So long routes, and they count all their miles all year. And they all talk about the number of pounds that their base weight is.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I did 2,700 miles last year on 9.5 pounds before food.
Wow.
And, you know, these guys are hand making their own bags out of IKEA, like Tyvek bags. And they're like, look, I made a 200 gram bag for $12 and some time on the sewing machine. It's properly nerdy.
Yeah.
Everything from like people asking for advice to, you know, the favorites of, you know, their favorite kid and favorite gear. And a lot of it, because these guys are not unlike ski bums, are very focused on dollar value of what they get, because they don't want to spend more time. These aren't guys that probably necessarily would prefer to have a full-time job.
Right,
they probably want to go somewhere like a Squamish.
Yeah, sure.
Or
wash dishes. And,
yeah, exactly.
Spend their
money on gear that'll keep them just warm enough to be comfortable but not weigh anything.
Yeah.
And you know, have as much of their life on the trail. And I definitely don't mean that in any pejorative way. And in many ways, I think
I aspire to that.
Yeah, I think having the daily job to do 2 or 3 weeks of what you really like to do is maybe way more backwards than the ski bum lifestyle of like, no, I'll just rough it and save every penny from serving beers in Whistler or whatever.
Yeah.
So that I can ski. You know, I knew one guy and he planted trees in Alberta.
Yeah.
And he got really good at, you can make a fortune doing that. Huh. So in a summer, in a season, he would make, you know, $30,000+
Yeah.
Just in a few months.
Yeah.
And then he would come back to Whistler to ski, and he could get 6.5 days a week for the whole ski season in Whistler.
Yeah.
And he lived like a king.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then now he's a ski guide in Japan.
Oh man.
He's doing fine.
Wow.
Really, really cool. But it's always fun to see these sorts of things where nerdiness is abounds.
Yeah.
And certainly r/ultralight. So if you're not a Reddit user, it's reddit.com/r/ultralight.
Yeah.
And then if you go, again, if you're not a Reddit user, if you just want to see some good stuff, just click on top, which will show you the top post from the last 24 hours, and then click all time.
Oh.
And just click through the first page. Like sometimes it's like a YouTube video of a guy showing you his 6.5 pound setup he did the entire Pacific Trail with.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're obsessed with, you know, efficiency of stoves and how much fuel you have to get. Like, it's great.
Sure.
It's really nerdy and really fun. I'm sure that will, I don't think I want to do any super ultralight camping, but I think the principles could be applied to any level of backpacking.
Yeah, if you pick and choose, you know, how short you saw your toothbrush from these guys, you know, it'll help with your kind of more conventional backpacking.
Yeah, no doubt. So what do you got next?
Yeah, so, you know, talking about expeditions, and this isn't exactly ultralight, but, you know, one of our sort of TGN heroes is Sir Ranulph Fiennes, who's one of the, he's been called one of the world's greatest living explorers. And
one of the coolest guys around.
Done pretty much everything. You know, I think we both have liked the book Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, which is his kind of autobiography, but I picked up a book of his at a used bookstore for like $6, and it was called To the Ends of the Earth, about the Transglobe Expedition, which is... It's this big brick of a book. I was going to bring it on the trip, but it was just too heavy to pack. I'm about halfway through it. But great old sort of Kodachrome colored, you know, photos from this expedition that he led in between... It was a three-year expedition from 1979 to 1982. And their goal was to circumnavigate the world via the polar axis. So if you go around the world, you know, make a voyage around the world, that's hard enough. But you're generally doing it in the same... climatic zone of the Earth, right? So if you're going around on a specific latitude line, you're always going to be cold, or you're always going to be hot or something. By doing it on the polar axis, you got to cross deserts, you have to go through jungle, you have to cross Antarctica and the, you know, across the North Pole and the Arctic. Huge effort. Took him, I think he started planning it in 1972, finally embarked in 1979. This wasn't an ultralight expedition by any means. I don't think they were sawing toothbrushes because they were using, you know, primitive snowmobiles, you know, they were on a ship, they were using Land Rovers to cross Africa. So, you know, not exactly, you know, man-hauling a sled or skiing or things like that, although they did some of that. But just a huge, you know, gargantuan effort to pull this off. And he's a exploration literature and adventure literature is great, but Ranulph Fiennes is genuinely a fantastic writer. And
if great you read writer, his great stuff, storyteller.
Very witty. He has that classic British dry wit. And, you know, just a really great book. So check that out. We'll put a link to an Amazon link to that book.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely need to add that to my list.
Yeah.
And I can close this out with something not that far off. I mean, we're well in the zone today.
Yeah.
This is a movie that you knew all about and that a friend turned me on to, and I'm embarrassed I didn't know it. I found it on YouTube, but apparently it's taken down all the time. It was PBS at some point, made a documentary called Alone in the Wilderness, the Dick Pronecke?
Prenicke, I think.
Prenicke?
Yeah.
Dick Prenicke story.
Yeah.
This guy might be the coolest.
Yeah.
So
seriously.
I think maybe the father of vlogging.
Yeah.
Without knowing it.
Yeah.
And just some unbelievable writing that he did. I dug into a little bit later on. He has a fantastic Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah.
And they've now done another part two of the documentary. And,
oh, nice.
And a third part is slated. Apparently, he shot so much and wrote so much.
Yeah.
35 years in Twin Lakes in Alaska. So to roll that back, 1968, this guy was a kind of a jack of all trades and a mechanic.
Carpenter and a mechanic, yeah.
And he saved up enough money to retire on his own terms.
Which age 51.
Was, yeah, he was 51, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And he basically found a spot in an area of Alaska called Twin Lakes, not too far from the waterfront, and built himself this amazing cabin, like... handmade at the most handmade level.
He cut down the trees for the logs that
he did
notched.
That one summer, came back the next summer when they were all dried up, hand cut all of the cabin joints, and he made himself, you know, doors and frames.
He made the hinges out of wood.
The hinges were crazy because when the voiceover's like, then I had to decide how to design my hinges.
Yeah.
And I was like, you didn't just buy a couple hinges and walk them up to it? Like,
right. This is, and then the tools, the hand tools. He made the handles himself because he didn't want to pack them along.
He was like bringing just the part of the tool you couldn't make, like whether it was an axe head or whatever. And then he's like, and the voiceover is incredulous. It's just why would I carry a handle I could very well make?
Yeah.
It's way lighter.
I think that's the key to the charm of this video is it's he's so folksy and so humble and matter of fact. He's not self-congratulatory or anything. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. He makes himself a whole, like a full stone fireplace in this thing.
Stone fireplace. He collected stones from like the lake bed or the river bed and he hauled them up enough to make himself a fireplace. It's incredible.
And so the from what I can tell, this hour-long or so documentary is all footage that he shot on a camera, including some long lens stuff of animals.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a journal, and they took that journal, turned it into voiceover, and then edited it into a movie.
Yeah.
Because you really can just watch the cabin being built.
Right.
And even if you have no interest in this type of lifestyle, this is like prime stress relieving stuff. You just watch a guy in the zone.
Yeah.
He's looking at animals. He's fishing. He's got a canoe up there.
Yeah.
And but the level where, like, I love where he had to finish his roof.
Yeah.
And he did so with tar paper, and he, like, even in his writing said he was guilty that, like,
it wasn't a nature-derived, yeah.
But, like, all the spaces between the logs,
yeah.
He's, like, hand-tacking, like, moss, or he had another name for it that I didn't recognize, but it looked like a thick lichen to insulate the house, but then he felt terrible that he had to use...
Yeah.
He had to use tar paper. I loved every minute of this. I'll be watching it again
next week.
I've watched
it twice in a row just last week. Yeah.
It's so good. So again, that's Alone in the Wilderness. And Dick would end up spending about 30 to 35 years, about 35 years in that cabin. He passed away late last decade, 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
It said that he went back to the mainland to visit family, but that he was that was his home.
Yeah.
That's where he rolled.
Yeah.
And... what a life.
Seriously.
So
really inspiring. It's funny, I was telling you I carried firewood in from outside the other day, and I told my wife, I said, well, that's the extent of my prenicky for the day. And
yeah,
I think
for sure.
I think it's kind of, we all need a little prenicky in our day.
And it gives you a little bit of a headspace on, like,
own
one thing that does what it does really well.
Yeah.
You don't need five. Like, I get the idea, you know. At one point, he's got tin, and he's turning and making all of his dishes in the wash bucket his...
Yeah.
And he talks about the food that he makes, and you can tell, like, that there's no level of waste in this guy's life. Something has a purpose, and he uses it. Like, everything to Dick was a tool.
Yeah.
The cabin was a tool to be in that space.
Right. And I love that he took the time to... Of course, he had to do something every day. He had to fetch water, make sure that his hole in the 2-foot-thick ice was open enough to get his water. He had to fish and hunt and everything else. But he took the time to take a morning and hike up to the high country to look at grizzly bears or at the mountain
sheep.
Yeah, yeah, blast the slopes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's so matter of fact too. It's, you know, he's talking about it's a clear morning and minus 28 degrees. You know, he's just out there in his, you know.
He comes across a recently killed carcass that the wolves didn't actually eat. They just kind of hobbled the animal and then left it to die.
Yeah,
and he. Quarters it on the field, takes all the... he had made himself a sled, puts the stuff on the sled, pushes it back, and then smokes everything.
Yeah.
In a homemade, of course, a homemade, like an awesome homemade smoker.
Yeah.
And he's just living.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, again, kind of like with ultra, with the ultralight thing, it's not that I want to do exactly what these guys are doing, but I think there's so many, like... there's so many lessons to be learned from that lifestyle that could be applied to any lifestyle.
I agree, yeah.
He didn't want for anything, and he had...
No. Yeah.
Next to nothing, aside from the fact that, like, he had a skill set that allowed him to make anything, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's clearly a man that wanted to be alone.
Yeah. Really, really awesome. That's a good one.
Please, please watch this. I will, in the show notes, grainado.com, in the show notes, I will link to the current YouTube link, but they seem to last about 4 days and then they get taken down.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have a DVR, do a search for it and schedule it. So if it ever pops up on PBS or whatever, your DVR will record it for you. Or if it's PBS, it might be at your local library on DVD.
Yeah.
Sometimes you come across some cool stuff like that.
Right.
But dig it up if you can. Certainly, every few days, go search it on YouTube, and you'll eventually find one that lasts long enough for you to watch it.
Yeah.
In the span of time that I watched it, I watched the first 5 minutes and came back to it a week later, and the original link was gone.
Oh.
And I had to search for another one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The full length should be about 55, 56 minutes. So that's how you know you're seeing the correct one, because it was PBS with limited commercials.
Right.
So nearly a full hour. But I love it. It was amazing. It was raw, inspirational, and really calming. I felt really kind of zenned out.
Yeah. And it almost makes... you watch it, and he's out there in... you know, a wool, like a flannel shirt, and, you know, wool socks, and, like, looks like Red Wing boots, and kind of like a Stormy Cromer kind of style cap, and you think, this is so, it looks so relevant to today because of this fashion that is kind of caught on with that type of product, but he's the real deal. I mean, this guy almost puts you to shame for, like, wearing your Red Wing boots and not, like, doing something in them or something, you know?
It was great.
It was great, yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. Hit the show notes for more details. You can follow us on Instagram at Jason Heaton and at J.E. Stacey, or you can follow the show at The Grainado. If you have any questions for us, please feel free to email thegrainado@gmail.com. And please subscribe and review. Reviews are very important. If you like the show, please leave us a review, preferably, you know, on iTunes if that's what you use. But please subscribe and review wherever you find your podcast, or you can grab the feed directly from thegrainado.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
Until next time, we leave you with this fitting quote from the Polar Explorer and Braymont Ambassador who's waiting for us downstairs, Ben Saunders, who said, "Real inspiration and growth only come from adversity and from challenge. from stepping away from what's comfortable and familiar and stepping out into the unknown. I certainly would implore you to open the door just a little bit and take a look at what's outside.